SBC Media.
Welcome to the iGaming Daily Podcast, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of the iGaming Daily Podcast, brought to you by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. 56% of the EGR Power 50 personalised player experiences with Optimove. And as a special offer, Optimove are offering new clients a free first month when they buy Optimove. For more information and to claim the free month, go to optimove.com/SBC. Links will also be left available in the podcast episode description. For today's episode, we're going to talk about something really different, a really unique sporting event that has been scheduled that has really polarized opinions and is also set to change the broadcasting landscape of sport, something that's kind of been lost in the uniqueness of the event. And I am, of course, talking about Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson, which I think is on scheduled for July the 20th from the AT&T Stadium in Texas, which could be significant because it means that it will potentially be sanctioned in Texas. But yeah, I think he'll be 58 at the time, Mike Tyson, against 30 years his junior, Jake Paul, a really unique event. And I'm here joined by Martin Elliott to discuss this. Martin, firstly, how are you? How is everything?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks, Joe. I would love to have been talking about Mike Tyson about 30 years ago.
Yeah,
I think you could probably just from that comment, you can see what I think of the idea behind this, but interesting.
Yeah, well, that was my first question to you. When you saw these two guys, you know, on this poster facing each other, the fight announcement, your initial reaction was?
I just thought it was a joke, to be honest. I thought it would be it was publicising something else that the Paul brothers would be doing. But sadly not. From Tyson's point of view, I don't see what he's getting out of it apart from a big pile of cash, I imagine, which is always nice. I guess if someone wants to give me a big pile of cash, I probably would fight Jake Paul for it. But I think from Jake Paul's point of view, it gives him, a big name on his resume and so on. But it's a little bit bordering on the unsafe, I would say, to put a 58-year-old man in there with, I mean, Jake Paul, whatever his background, he's in serious shape. He's a proper athlete and he can punch a bit. There's no doubt he's got some power in his hands. So I have some doubts about, the spectacle will be fun on the day. There's no doubt Netflix will put on a really good show with this. But yeah, I just have that bit of doubt that it's not safe and the Texas Boxing Commission should not be sanctioning this.
Okay, let's shelve that for 1 second. There's obviously so much to dissect about the fact that the guy that was the baddest man on the planet now, you know, he's now nearly 60s and he's fighting Jake Paul of all people. There's so much to talk about that. Let's firstly talk about Netflix and Netflix moving into live sport taking a very strange avenue to do so with this. But as you say, it will be a big event. How significant is that to sport in general and also to combat sports, the fact that this is where it seems like their interest lies?
Yeah, well, Netflix, on their sort of earnings calls and so on, they've consistently said, no, we don't think live sport is right for us. It doesn't fit our streaming model. You know, we prefer the documentary approach, the drive to survive and that kind of thing. But this isn't actually quite their first step into it. They've had a tennis game, which I think was Rafa Nadal against Alcaraz, which is, you know, as big as it gets in tennis, apart from the fact it's not in a heritage tournament, so it was a friendly to all intents and purposes. They've also had this bizarre golf tournament in which professional golfers teamed up with F1 drivers to have a couple of rounds of golf in, I think, Las Vegas, which is, if you're as old as I am, you remember International Pro Celebrity Golf with Peter Alice on the BBC. They've just borrowed from that format. And they've now gone with this sort of, I don't know what you call it, influencer against retired boxer, celebrity type matchup. And I guess it's a bit of a precursor to when they get WWE from 2025. I think they're getting WWE Raw, aren't they? So I wonder if it's a bit of a toe in the water, see if they can make pretend sports work, shall we say. Well, that's a bit harsh on the athletes involved, obviously. But I think there'll be a lot of people who work in the sporting world will be keeping a close eye on this and a close eye on the viewing figures, because if there's another broadcaster comes in with a big checkbook for some of these, some of the more mainstream events, you know, it'll be the leagues and the teams and the individual athletes who are the winners.
Yeah, and I think wrestling fans up and down the industry are elbow dropping their laptops at the sighting of pretend sports, but. it is a fascinating event, and it's interesting that you say, you know, that they've always said it doesn't fit their type of model. They've always preferred the sort of docuseries thing that we've seen, that's super engaging, and you know, if it's done right, it's fantastic. And they did quite a good one with the Paul brothers, actually. But what I would say is, I think that fuels the live streaming product. I think if you can lead into a live stream with content that is like a docuseries, I think that can be incredibly beneficial. I think we've seen with Wrexham and with the Drive to Survive stuff, no doubt more eyes are watching Wrexham play live, you know, on however they can, and no doubt more eyes are watching Formula One as a result of them documentaries.
Yeah, I mean, I would think if I was one of the finance people at Netflix, I'd be thinking, we've invested a lot of money in Drive to Survive, and yet the bigger benefit is coming from the people who have the broadcast rights for the F1 races themselves. Yeah. So that there is some logic in Netflix experimenting with actual sport, and it'd be really interesting to see what budget they've got to spend on live sport.
Yeah.
If some of these trial events do some good numbers for them. Could they take, you know, the final package in the Premier League, or perhaps, you know, the occasional live game in, I'm just looking at UK terms here, in the EFL or even Scottish football, or, you know, could they get one of the broadcast packages for the NFL, for instance? That would be huge for them if they could do that. But it'll just be down to money in the end.
Yeah.
There's no doubt they've got the production wherewithal. They know how to put on a show, know how to present it. So it'll just come down to the cash, I guess.
You know, if they're not putting cameras on, if there's nothing planned with Mike Tyson in the run up to this, that is like a six-parter, that, you know, they have a camera on him, his training, and we see that. I think they've missed a real opportunity, because I don't know who wouldn't watch that. But
yeah, I don't know if you listen to the or watch occasionally the Mike Tyson podcast.
It's turbulent.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? I mean, there are, because of some things that have gone on earlier in his life, I always feel a bit guilty enjoying anything Mike Tyson does. I kind of think I shouldn't be doing that. Despite the fact he was a great hero of mine when I was growing up, up until he got sent to prison, then obviously slight change of opinion, particularly in our household, about him. But yeah, he's such an, if you can overlook that, he's such an engaging character. He's, he could be a big breakout star for Netflix just in his own right.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think, you know, he touches on something that's really interesting. You mentioned it earlier about, you know, what does he get out of this? Well, I don't think he's ever made a secret of the fact there's, you know, a fire that burns inside. And when he spoke about sort of wanting to reignite that fire, he had the exhibition with Roy Jones Jr. a few years ago that was an exhibition, which I'm led to believe this won't be, but where he's always yearned to continue fighting and to continue fueling that fire. I'd like to believe there's a better way of doing it than fighting a 27-year-old who is quite a big puncher. But yeah, he's always yearned to get back in there. He's a fascinating character. Do you give him a chance here?
Not really.
This is not a competitive fight, right? For a 58-year-old, it shouldn't be happening.
No, I think he's not lived the greatest of lives in terms of athletic preparation, yeah, shall we say. And I'm guessing there'll be this won't be fought under the WADA code with drug tests in the build-up and so on. So there's that element. And he was absolutely spent towards the end of his career, yeah, when he lost to Danny Williams and Kevin McBride, yeah, and so on. So it's that's a long time ago, even those fights at the fag end of his career. So I think Jake Paul will be too fit, too athletic for him. And that'll be quite a sad thing to see in many ways. A guy who arguably, at the age of 21, was the greatest heavyweight fighter of all time. He's almost unbeatable. He was so good at that age. So to see him lose to an ex-Disney star turned, whatever it is, YouTube celebrity, yeah, or something. Is he?
Antagonist as well, I would say. He plays the role of bad guy quite well. He enjoys, yeah, being disliked. So I don't think that lends itself to, yeah.
Can I have a counter proposal for this? If Jake Paul pulls out, I would love to see Tyson Fury's dad take on Mike, yes, Tyson in one of these one-off exhibition matches. But
that would be okay, right? Two older guys that are sort of, yeah, rolling the dice a little bit. I guess that would be a bit more justifiable. Yeah, a bit more justifiable, yeah, a bit more acceptable. I think what's worrying here from a Netflix point of view, in my opinion anyway, is the reaction I've seen from sort of boxing fans and from sports fans who, you know, like yourself, adored Mike Tyson back in the day, is one of just pure disdain, really. And I think as a first entry point for Netflix, they're painting themselves as a novelty promoter, a joke promoter that doesn't really have the sport's best interests at heart from early.
Yeah, but I wonder whether they're thinking, it's the same thinking as the celebrity, not the, the influence of boxing we've talked about before, yeah, with KSI and people like that. And there's a particular demographic of people who are really, really loyal to these influencers and to YouTube stars and so on. They will no doubt be buying Netflix I'm not sure whether this is going to be pay-per-view or part of the standard Netflix package. They will definitely buy this. And are probably more likely to stick around than someone like me who consumes most of my sport on, you know, normal broadcast TV. Mm. You know, I spend a fortune to have many Sky Sports, TNT Sports, Eurosport, etc.
Yeah.
At the moment. So perhaps it's just a reach into the Jake Paul.
Tap into the Jake Paul market rather, yeah, than the core sports audience.
I think Tyson will prove popular with that audience as well.
Yeah,
just because,
sure,
of the character he is.
Yeah. Yeah, and he will bring in an audience himself. No, absolutely no doubt about that. And you mentioned, is it pay-per-view? I'm led to believe that this event is not going to be pay-per-view. It's going to be with the standard Netflix subscription, which, you know, almost everyone has a Netflix subscription these days or knows someone that has one. So the eyes that will be on this event are really, really astronomical. It will draw significant viewership, probably the most for a combat sports event in modern times anyway. And it's also going to be at the AT&T Stadium, which is an 80,000 capacity. So they're either going to go 60,000 or 80,000. Again, for such a weird event that isn't a big fight, it's a strange fight. That's massive numbers. And it also leans me to thinking that you can't put head guards on them and you can't make it an exhibition if you're putting 60,000 tickets out for sale.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no way this could be fought under exhibition rules and, look like essentially, when you put the head guards on, it does look a bit like you're just in training. It doesn't look like a proper fight. I know that's not quite the scientific explanation of how the head guards work, but that's how it looks. One thing I find a little bit strange about these things is if you were, I don't know, an up-and-coming middleweight guy who's just got into the top 10, you'd be looking at this going, why am I bothering going for the world title? I could just fight some gadget off YouTube, get paid five times as much and become a superstar.
Well, I think they kind of did that with Jake Paul, right? Like his last two fights have been, and this Mike Tyson fight was signed before the WWE deal with Netflix. Okay. Signed before that. So yeah, they did that before with Jake Paul. They had him fight sort of guys that were borderline journeyman, but not, they had winning records and I think they were unbeaten, but these guys were going nowhere. They weren't great. I think if you watch the fights, they were pretty dreadful. And they don't do great numbers. They don't do very well. There's not a lot of money in them compared to this type of event anyway. So yeah, it's a real strange one. And when we speak about whether it'll be exhibition, how many rounds it'll be, you know, head guards or no head guards, the one wild card there, the key factor is the Texas Commission. I don't know what it's called exactly, but the Texas Commission will obviously decide that. I guess they've sanctioned things before that have been a little bit questionable. So, you know, and this is very lucrative. So, yeah, my money would be that it does get sanctioned and does go ahead over 8 or 10 rounds as a proper fight. But yeah, that is still a little bit up in the air.
Yeah. I mean, that is a big question about it, I guess, but I can't see it going ahead under any other thing. They can just go unsanctioned. There's nothing to stop them having this as a sort of unofficial match, is there? So I guess the money is more important than the Texas Boxing Commissioner's signature on a bit of paper somewhere.
Yeah, I think that will prove to be the case. I guess the other aspect of this is from a betting perspective. Obviously, we know Jake Paul has his Better brand. You know, they fantasy sports picks, that type of stuff. They're obviously going to have their brand plastered all over it, which might take away some of the room for you know, other advertisers in terms of betting partnerships. I'm sure Mike will have somebody that is plastered on his back or something like that, that is a betting partner. But firstly, do you think there will be a reluctance from brands to get involved in this commercially? Like, because it is such a weird event. We're watching a 27-year-old probably knock out a 58-year-old. Secondly, how do you price this stuff?
Yeah, well, the first one is easier to answer than the second one. And just to go back a little bit, my understanding is that Jake Paul's involvement in Better may prevent Better being able to offer odds on this fight in some of the markets it's licensed in.
That makes a lot of sense.
In the US, yeah. Just for regulatory purposes. So it might not be a great promotional opportunity for Better. I would expect this will go to an offshore, a crypto casino, because those guys love to play, love to be seen to be playing by different rules. They love combat sports. They're huge for crypto casinos. And I think Tyson has actually been brand ambassador for some of these people, and certainly some South American betting brands as well. Yeah. He's been involved with. It used to be Parry Match, I think. Didn't he? He used to be a brand ambassador.
Yes, back in the day, yeah.
Him and Conor McGregor,
yeah.
And the brand ambassador pairing you wouldn't invite round to your house for tea. So yeah, I would think it won't. I can't imagine it'll be steak, but it might be a Rubet or a BC Bet or one of these type of crypto casinos.
Even a casino, he's always been quite big into casinos, Tyson. He's always had branded slots and I remember branded blackjack back in the day as well. So yeah, maybe, you know, I think there will be partners there for it, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. And how do you price it?
Yeah, you're ducking the big question here.
Okay.
I guess Jake Paul's going to be favourite inside the distance.
I would think so, wouldn't you? I mean, you'd be starting off with that, surely, if you're pricing it. This is a really good question. This has feature article written all over it. I'm going to go and email a load of people who work in work in trading rooms.
Coming soon to a leaders magazine near you, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, surely all the money will be going on Paul to win.
Do you think, see, I was just thinking the opposite in my head, I'll be honest with you. And I was just thinking about the opportunity for, you know, in terms of betting engagement for sports books, for the nostalgic 40, 50 year old that has watched Mike Tyson, that is going to watch Tyson highlights, he's going to see on their Facebook a clip of him punching the pads and looking still like he's got a bit left, when really we all know. And they're going to see Tyson at probably what, like 7 or 8 to 1? Wow. Something like that. And they're going to have a bit of money on that.
If I was the marketing guy involved, do you remember the, what's he called? Buster Douglas, who beat Tyson back in the day? He only one casino in Vegas offered prices on that. And they made Douglas, 38 to 1 Douglas was.
Wow.
And if I remember rightly, they only took one bet on that. Everyone else piled on Tyson. And there's a ESPN documentary about
one of the 30 for 30. Yeah,
and it's called, I think it's called 38 for 1 as well. So I might just cash in on that, make Tyson 38 to 1.
Just as a marketing. That's a great shout. That's a really good shout.
Because I don't think you're going to lose any money with people betting on Tyson.
No, I think, yeah, it's a really awkward one to price. I don't know how you would do rounds, because obviously all this money on the event, I don't think, if he can knock him out in the first round, I don't think he's going to want to knock him out in the first round, Jake Paul. I think he's going to sort of see him home for a bit. I don't know. But real challenge, and also an opportunity for trading rooms, because it's such a unique event and I have no idea how I'd price it.
No. But the other big question, are you going to watch?
Ooh, I'm incredibly critical of the event. I don't think it should be happening. Sign me up. I will be watching every minute of it, because it's going to be so interesting.
Yeah. I mean,
it's Mike Tyson. I love Mike Tyson as well. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to tell you, I haven't watched it at work on the Monday, but I will definitely be watching it.
And it's free to air on Netflix. So yeah, I guess a lot of people will be watching. I'll probably even buy into the hype and tell you that Tyson's going to knock him out as well. But a lot to discuss there, a lot to continue building up to with this fight. And it's not really just a fight. It's more the entry of Netflix, how they do that, how sports books and how betting operators market the event. You know, the things we see in the build up to this event is going to be really interesting. And I look forward to discussing with you more, both in the office and on the podcast. And yeah, look out for that feature as well, because that is going to be a fascinating one.
Thank you for listening to today's iGaming Daily Podcast, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders Magazine. Happy reading.